right, it is episode number 65 of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast alongside the demanding Jamie Eisner and the musical Craig Morgan. I'm Luke Lipinski. How's everybody doing?
Feeling good today.
Yeah, you should.
Had a weekend off.
Wow.
Awesome.
Oh. I don't like Craig as much anymore.
I termed it 2 days off, and my wife said to me, that's what everyone else calls a weekend.
It's kind of sad when you think about it that way, though.
It is.
You get like 3 of those a year, don't you?
Took so much out of me.
Yeah.
When she said it that
it's
way.
Kind of a downer.
Yeah. It doesn't even feel like a weekend anymore.
Thanks for pointing that out.
Remember when you were a kid and you were in school and Sunday night was basically like when it got to like 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon,
it was
basically
when you heard the 60 minutes theme at the end of the late football game, you knew your weekend was over.
Yeah. Wow. Jamie really just painted a vivid picture there.
We just hopped right into his living room.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to hockey here, okay? Episode 65, of course, means this is the Erik Karlsson episode, so just on principle alone, Craig Morgan is doing this podcast under protest.
As I said earlier, we're going on the offensive, and we won't defend anything we say. That's our tagline for this one.
Jamie's typing it up right now. All right, well, this is already a strange... He just mimed typing while typing.
Yeah.
See that?
Like he's actually typing. Or he's a dinosaur trying to type. I can't figure it out. Cartoon dinosaur.
By the way, mimes versus clowns. On the continuum.
I mean, clowns are the worst, so mimes are just close.
Close, but not quite.
I don't get the appeal
of
mimes.
Clowns are the extreme of whatever this continuum is calling.
Is there anything on the other end of
that
continuum?
What is that continuum called?
I don't know. The circus continuum?
I don't know. Yeah, well, circus, that's a start.
The continuum of uncomfortableness?
That's what involves makeup.
Yeah.
Okay.
And comedy, or attempted comedy.
Attempted comedy.
It's terrifying. How's that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mimes are just silent clowns.
Mimes to the left of clowns, though.
Yeah.
Got it. I'm glad we established that early in the show for anybody that's still listening.
I don't get the appeal of mimes either.
Yeah.
Like, best case scenario, what's entertaining about mimes?
I mean, best case scenario is if they're annoying you, you can just turn away and they can't say anything.
That's a good point.
What about mimes that trade away franchise centers? How do you feel about that?
No, not a big fan of that.
Okay. Bad combination.
Shirelian mimes.
Shirelian mimes. Now we have a name for this week's podcast. All right. It's a weird show, so let's talk about the eventual Stanley Cup between the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Minnesota Wild, because that's where we're headed, right?
Yeah. Jackets, 12 straight wins. Wild, 10 straight wins.
Which one of these two teams do you believe in more?
Boy, that's a good question. Wow. That's a good question.
I knew we kept you around for some reason. Yeah.
It was that one question.
I'm going to go with Minnesota because this is a team that's kind of been gradually getting better. I believe in their goaltending more. I believe in their coach. And I kind of like how they're getting depth scoring. I also think they have a much easier path.
Well, yeah, okay. But, I mean, if they played in the Cup, which we all agree is not going to happen.
It's not happening. The league will lock itself out prior to that happening.
Boy, I don't know. You know, watching the Jackets, I haven't seen the Wild live yet this season. They don't come until, like, the last game of the regular season for the Coyotes sometime in late March. But Columbus just comes at you in waves. They're an impressive team.
We had Verbata on 2 weeks ago, and he said that was one of the two toughest teams. Oh,
Verbata.
Verbata.
Thank you.
He said that was one of the two most difficult
teams
that they've played, and they've played Chicago and a lot of the top teams this year. So
you're right. I mean, you're right, Luke. They haven't sustained this. Minnesota has had some previous success, although
not a lot.
Not a lot. They didn't. It's not like they advanced really far in the playoffs. But the thing they have is they have a defensive structure in place, and now it's like they're almost branching out from this. And Bruce Boudreau is teaching them how to score in games and win with offense. And it's pretty terrifying, actually, to think of what they might be able to do because they are so disciplined defensively. And Devin Dubnyk is having a Vezina Trophy season.
He is. I mean, Bobrovsky's having a great year as well. For some reason, I feel like I trust – this is going to sound really weird to say. I feel like Columbus is the better team. But I'm with Jamie, which is also weird to say.
Just playing both sides of the fence here.
Well, if you're asking me which one has an easier path to get deeper into the playoffs, it's possible Columbus would have to go through, like, Pittsburgh and then Washington and then Tampa or Montreal, although they own Montreal this year. Whereas Minnesota,
They have to go through your Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah. They're not beating the Blackhawks.
No, they're not beating the Blackhawks.
But maybe they get the Blackhawks in round two, and Columbus gets Pittsburgh in round one. I don't know. They play each other on December 31st. So what better way to ring in the new year than by watching Minnesota-Columbus?
Yeah. And, you know, what's interesting to me is if you look at the goals for in the Western Conference, Minnesota is second. They have three fewer goals than Edmonton this season in three fewer games. I mean, it's
they're
remarkable how much they're scoring.
Low 1.94 goals against.
It's
impressive.
Yeah, I mean they've scored as many goals as the Blackhawks in three less games and have allowed 20 fewer. 20. Yeah.
That is absurd. Here's the other thing that's absurd. You've got a team on a 12-game winning streak, a team on a 10-game winning streak. There's the longest losing streak in hockey right now is 4 games. This doesn't add up.
Because nobody loses anymore.
No, they really don't. Like, if you go back like 2 weeks, we had Minnesota was on like a 6-game winning streak or whatever, 5-game, and Columbus on a 6-game. But Philadelphia was on a 10, and Pittsburgh was on a 7. And there's all these teams on lengthy winning streaks. And then there's like
the Anaheim Ducks have a losing record, and they're in a playoff spot.
They list it as OT. You know, when a team loses in OT, it's the NHL standings again, right?
The Ducks have lost more games than they've won this year, and they're in a playoff spot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Nobody
loses anymore.
That's true. And I was talking to Mike Fica from the Morning News about the Stars today for a story I'm writing. And, you know, he's saying it's remarkable that they're sitting where they're sitting at 14, 14, and 7. And everybody looks at that. Oh, my God, they're at 500 still. They can lose. They're 7 games below 500.
They've lost 60% of their games.
They're 7 games below 500. That's the truth of it.
They have technically a 400 winning percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're... They're right on the outside of the playoffs looking in. I mean, 500
says a lot about the Western Conference.
Yeah, it does. It really does. Although, as we record this, it would still only be three teams from the Central that made the playoffs.
How did the West turn to such trash so quickly?
It's because of the Metro Division and the fact that those top five teams are just rolling everybody. I mean, even Carolina hasn't been bad this year, and they have no shot at making the playoffs. Like, isn't Carolina basically doing what we all kind of thought they would do? They're kind of being... a surprise team. They've taken a step up from where they were last year, and they have no chance.
Yeah, because, you're right.
They're 7 points back of the Capitals.
Quote-unquote, 4 games over 500.
And that's just not enough anymore. Anything else to say about Minnesota and Columbus?
Do you want to see this? Do you want to see this cup final? If this were to materialize, would you want to see it?
No. Look,
you wouldn't? Okay.
That's a tough question, because aesthetically, not the sexiest matchup. But for those markets themselves and when you're trying to build there, I think it would be excellent. I think from a pure hockey standpoint, it would be a fun series to watch.
Yeah, Columbus
for a rating standpoint, it's a train wreck.
Craig just hit it, though. Columbus is fun to watch.
They are.
Yeah. Minnesota is not fun to watch.
They're more fun to watch than they have been.
More fun, yeah.
Okay, that
I
means
they are.
Nothing.
But
they used to be the most boring team in the world, and now they are. I will give you
they're more fun than they were before.
And I do think it would be a great story if at the end of the year we're looking back and saying – Minnesota, where hockey is sport
State
1, 2, 3. Yeah, I mean, it's the most important sport there, all the way down to high school. High school is basically treated like pro hockey is in some other places. It would be a great story for the Wild to win the Cup. I'm just not sure I necessarily would want to watch it if that was my choice. I think Columbus is more exciting.
I know you want your Pittsburgh, Chicago. I get it.
No, I don't want Chicago. Look at all the other teams in the West. All the other teams in the West that are in contention to me play a more exciting brand of hockey than Minnesota.
St. Louis?
Yeah, I think St. Louis is more exciting just because they have Tarasenko.
Because they have Tarasenko?
It's not a knock on Minnesota, and I hate the argument that, like, well, that would be terrible for the league because of ratings. Like, I think it would be good for the league if Minnesota finally won a cup. It's amazing to me that they never have. Not just the Wild or the North Stars, though, either.
Championships in the last 20 years for Minneapolis-St. Paul?
Zero.
Championship appearances in the last 20 years for Minneapolis-St. Paul?
I believe zero. I read your article.
Yeah.
Craig likes to write about Minneapolis-St. Paul, and I like to read. Yeah.
They're the least successful of the four sport markets.
Yeah.
Arizona's
pretty close.
Wrong. Yeah, to bring that up. I'm not wrong here, right? The North Stars never won the Stanley Cup.
Nope.
Okay. Nope.
That's something
became the South Stars.
Fixed. Thank you. And then they won the Stanley Cup.
They did eliminate the Blackhawks, but the Blackhawks won the President's Trophy, but...
That was the last.
Not that you hold a grudge, or
it's faded from memory now. It's no longer important.
I'm sure.
All those Stanley Cup rings in your ears.
Yes.
All right. Can we move on from these two?
Yep.
Sure.
But how is, hold on, how is Columbus doing this? It's just, it is, there's not a lot of weaknesses on this team.
A lot of their young players have matured at the same time, the which is partially skill, but partially luck, where they all come together at the same time and play really well. They're just relentless. And when Bobrovsky's been on his game, and he has been very up and down in the last several years, you know, of his career, you put that together with a team that's all clicking offensively, that's tough to beat.
Do you think they can sustain this beyond this year? Like, is this, are we basically witnessing the arrival of Columbus as a perennial playoff team?
I mean, they're going to lose one of their big forwards just because of the way the expansion draft's going to work. But I do think that this is more than a one-year thing. Okay. They're not the favorite to win the cup in my mind this year or next year. But I don't think. Yeah, but I don't think this is a team that's going to go back to what it was last year record-wise.
Okay, I mean that's the extreme, but.
Or even close to that. Like, I think this is a team that we're going to be talking about as a playoff contender for a few years now, barring something unforeseen.
Because, I mean, I've said this on the show in the past, they built their team a little differently than some of these other teams on the rise.
Right, and this is, you'd like to see a team like this be able to succeed, because you like to believe that you don't need that huge piece in the middle to win a cup. It'd be cool to see a team with good centers win a cup.
Well, even just, you don't have to get the first pick in the draft to win the cup.
Yeah. And as I mentioned this on the show prior, if they had did this last year, I think it would have been much more believable to people, which I think it makes it a little bit more logical progression. This is just coming a year later than everybody thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think that's fair, although now a 12-game winning streak is just absurd no matter
That's absurd for any
team. Who you are and when you're doing it.
But interestingly, they're still a middling possession team. I wouldn't have guessed that, actually, without looking at the numbers, because when I watch them, it just seems like they generate so many chances.
Has anyone broken that down to see what it is like when they're, I mean, I know you don't want to parse sample sizes too much, but they're Corsi close, because they're getting up 3, 4, 5 goals on teams, and then the score effects do take effect there.
Part of it.
I haven't looked that closely at it. I can tell you that they
was that pun intended?
Yes, it was. Any pun I accidentally make is intended. How's that? Accidentally intentional. The Blue Jackets have the best record in hockey. They also have games in hand on most teams. Like, if you're just looking in the Metro, they still have 3 games in hand on Pittsburgh and 4 in hand on the Rangers. They have 4 in hand on Chicago in terms of the best record in hockey. It's quite the story. I think it's one of the best stories of the first half of this season. It's not taking anything away from Minnesota either. I've seen them in the playoffs before, and I've seen Bruce Boudreau in the playoffs before, and they, to me, are the poster child for the team that convinces everybody, hey, you know what? This is Minnesota's year, and they go out to the Blackhawks in 6 games in round 1.
No, they would go out in 7 games, Luke.
Yes, they'll lose game 7.
Okay, well, but I was just averaging, because usually Minnesota goes out to the Blackhawks in 5.
Seriously, though, we would have agreed at the start of the year that these were the two best divisions in hockey, right?
Yes.
And these two teams would have probably been 4th or 5th on our list of contenders in each of these divisions when we started the season?
Yeah, I would say that's fair.
It's crazy. It's a great story.
It has been. Over in the Metro, too, Mike Sullivan, 3-year extension with the Pittsburgh Penguins. The stat on him, and I want to make sure I have it right, and maybe you guys have already seen this. He took over last year, mid-December? And there's all the numbers where Crosby is averaging over a point per game since he took over. And remember, people were saying Crosby was done at age 28 last year. Malkin, I believe, is 3rd in the league, and Chris Letang is 6th in the league in points since Sullivan took over. But the stat that really stands out to me, they lost their first 4 when he took over last season. Since then, they've gone 85 straight games without losing back-to-back games in regulation.
That's insane.
And if you count the playoffs, it's 109.
That's insane.
I can't remember a coach stepping in, and I could totally be forgetting somebody, so if I am, throw their name at me. But a coach stepping in and instantly turning a team around like that, just unlocking whatever was wrong with
Dan Bylsma.
Yeah, but they weren't
same team, almost exact same team, same situation.
They weren't as dominant though when he took over.
True, but he took over much later in the season, didn't he?
He did, and they weren't terrible when he took over. That was kind of a weird situation.
By the way, in no other sport can you do this. No. I guess maybe NBA, but there's like no other sport where you change your coach that late in the season and your team gets better that season. Can you imagine that scenario in as a college football coach or an NFL coach? Or
absolutely not in the NFL.
Right?
No.
They got better?
They change the coach and get better that immediately that season. And there's not like a transition period.
It's a weird story.
By the way, to follow up earlier, where the score close, Columbus is 7th in the league in possession.
Okay.
All right. So I think part of that is they're just getting up so big on teams that, again, they're human beings. You're up 5-0. How hard are you really pushing in that third period?
Could the New York Jets possibly get better with a coaching change? I don't think they can get any worse.
It's tough.
Well, I think Jamie was implying get better to the point where you're good. I mean, you can always get a little bit better, but to actually be good.
Wow. Poor Todd Bowles. It should have stayed in the hospital.
Back to Columbus real quick, though. If you look at what they've done to good teams this year, 10-0 over Montreal, 7-1 over Pittsburgh, 8-4 to St. Louis, 6-2 to the Islanders. I just wanted to throw that in there. As
a good team.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's ridiculous to see a team go over 6 goals that many times in the first third of the season, basically. It's not like we're looking back at the end of the year, and here's their 3 high-scoring games.
Cam freaking Atkinson, where's this coming from?
Well, I mean, Atkinson shot the puck a million times over the last 3 years. It's about time a few more went in. But, I mean, they're burying teams, and that's what they need to do. And you wonder how much of the way last season started is motivating them where, you know, they're not jaded enough to think to buy into their own hype yet. I mean, I think a lot of teams should be worried about that. Considering the way what most of this roster started, I think they remember very clearly how that season went.
Yeah, that's a great point. Most of this team was there last year and had to go through that, with the exception of Seth Jones and Zach Werenski. Pretty much everybody here was playing last year for Columbus when they were struggling at the start of the year. Also, you can bring up Cam Atkinson if you want as the really strange story. I kind of expect him to be decent. Where did Sam Gagne come from with 14 goals?
Well, it's such a crazy role, right? He's playing fourth line, but he's playing on the power play. It's an interesting way of using him, and it's been effective so far.
Yeah.
It allows him to use his skill, which he has, but he's never been a guy who's going to perform well against other teams' top talent.
No, or sustain it. I mean, we've seen stretches. I mean, beyond the 8-point game, but he's got a ton of talent. It just, he never got over the hump.
About half of his points are on the power play.
He brings up that 8-point game every week. Are you okay with it?
I'm okay with it now, just like I'm okay with, you know.
The Stanley Cup seal, everything.
John Casey and the Minnesota North Stars taking out the Blackhawks. I wasn't okay at that time.
But you've moved. You've grown as a person, as we've done.
I have grown as a person because of the 3 Cups. Otherwise, I never would have progressed.
And also, I mean, they're doing this without Boone Jenner contributing much. What does he have, 6 goals this year?
Yeah,
it was 30 goals last year. Everyone thought, okay, here we go. Here's the next time, and he's got 6.
That's scary. I mean, he could
Kentucky
pick it
made
up.
Whiskey, Boone Jenner.
I'll just leave that out there.
That's all I can think of when I hear his name.
How about
sounds like Kentucky whiskey.
The simple fact that Sam Gagne is driving on a team coached by John Tortorella. That
there's
might
so
be
many
the weirdest
fun angles
story.
To Columbus. See, that's the thing. That's another reason I think about it as a reporter. I'd love to cover this series because Columbus is fascinating. They're a fascinating team. There's so many stories there.
I think it would be cool. Plus I would watch it.
Yeah, and you can reunite with your favorite player, Brandon Saad.
He's not over that one yet.
No, he's staring a hole right through me right now.
He really is.
I'm melting.
We're here on Boxing Day, and Jamie's just instigating Craig. Hello. By the way, I have to give it up to everybody in this office. It really is December 26th, and this place is packed. I think this is the only business that's actually working today.
It pretty
Jamie
much is.
Jamie didn't give him the day off. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just say it.
These holidays don't mean anything anymore.
Ebenezer Scrooge. All right. Moving on to...
Finally.
I know. About time.
You guys brought this
You
up.
Tried to make this transition like 7 minutes ago, by
I
the way.
I have tried to. Well, we talked about Mike Sullivan. You want to talk about Auston Matthews? I know this is your favorite topic. Auston Matthews coming home.
It's a good story.
He's a good hockey player.
Yeah. He's a swell hockey player.
I think he's the only player in the league that wears the double-breasted suit.
Huh. We'd have to explore that a little more.
That seems like
I'm
a Craigslist.
I'm thinking that Brent Burns might have one in his closet.
Ooh.
That's probably true. Yeah. So. I don't want to dig deep in Brent Burns' closet.
No, I don't know.
You might actually find a live bear in there.
he's waiting to pull that out. All I will say, the column that I wrote most recently is, I think the guy has lived up to his hype.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the toughest things to do in sports.
As I noted, I mean, not only are you carrying the weight of this hockey market, which just so desperately wants to be taken seriously, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Arizona hockey market, it's fair to say that. You're carrying the weight of the Toronto hockey market, which is the biggest hockey market in the world, and there's so much pressure there. And
being the known number one pick for a year.
You're supposed to be a franchise center.
Plus,
anything less will be a disappointment. No big deal.
Plus, you spurn juniors in the U.S. Development League to go overseas.
Love that path.
I do too. But if he failed, you know that would be thrown back up at him. Right. Oh, you should have played here. You would have learned how to play the game the right way.
Tweeted out pictures of his stats every day with his three assists on the year or something.
By the way, more players should do that.
I wonder if more players will consider it now.
I do wonder that. I mean, you have to be at a certain level.
Yeah, Auston Matthews is a special talent. That's one of the biggest.
I think that's why he hit the ground running. You're playing against bigger. I mean, they may not be as skilled necessarily as the top players in junior, but you're playing against guys that are 6, 7, 8 years older than you, bigger, more physically developed. They're teaching you parts about the game. I mean, I think that's a much better – if you can pull it off, that's a much better
path. You have to be able to pull it off, though. But I will agree with the notion that if we're going to just be stuck with this same sort of stupid rule where you are old enough to play in the NHL or in an adult league overseas, but for some reason you're not old enough to play in the AHL – then, yeah, at a certain point, why wouldn't players just go over there and...
Why wouldn't agents recommend it to them?
Absolutely.
Players? Hey, listen, we are tired of this ridiculous stranglehold they have on players. No. Don't play. Go make some money.
Go make some money.
Go through USA Hockey. Yeah. Go play abroad, and then when you're ready, go to the NHL.
Yeah, if you don't want to go to college, you don't want to go that particular route, go make some money overseas.
Now, it's a tougher sell for Canadian kids, right, who grow up with this ingrained in their culture. Oh, yeah. So, you're still going to have a huge percentage, but for American players and clearly, well, European players are an entirely different breed anyway.
But you see a little bit with some of the prospective NBA players where they say, you know what, no, I'm not going to spend the year going to college pretending like I'm going to go to school for a semester, because they really don't. I'll go overseas, I'll go to China, I'll go make six figures for a year, and then I'll come back into the draft.
The two things that have stood out to me about Auston Matthews more than anything so far is the simple fact, like Craig just said, he has met the hype so far. Like, he's lived up to it, and we're halfway through the first season. So far, he's done it with all the sort of mitigating factors you just pointed out of sort of carrying the torch for this entire market in the most pressure-packed market, and it doesn't seem to faze him. But the other thing, I guess, kind of builds off that, the simple fact that he rises to the occasion anytime there is an occasion, and I know there hasn't been a lot yet. It's not like he's been to the playoffs, but if you think about it, his first game at home, he gets an assist within... what, 3 or 4 minutes, and he makes the play, a great play to keep the puck onside. His first game against the Coyotes, he scores the first goal. His first ever game, he scores 4 goals. So he's definitely shown so far to be one of those players that the moment's not going to get too big for him.
And those are rare. Those are so rare, guys who can rise in those moments. That's a really good sign for that.
Especially at that age. I mean, what he and McDavid have been able to do since they came in the league is quite remarkable, because the expectation level was almost at a level where it couldn't be reached, and they have both reached them. It's remarkable. I mean, how many times do we talk about, you know, we're still waiting on number one and number two picks to really make their mark. We're still, you know, we talk all the time, Nugent Hopkins, is he truly, did he live up to that? Yakupov didn't live up to that.
No, they haven't.
You know, it's so difficult to live up to that spot. And McDavid for multiple years, and Auston Matthews for about a year and a half leading up to it, everybody knowing you're going to be the guy.
Right.
That's really tough.
Yeah, I think we've done this on the show before, where if you look back at the number one overall picks since about 2000, for the most part, they're all very successful NHL players. Although the examples Jamie just gave, I mean, Neil Yakupov is probably one of the closest to a bust you're going
to
find.
And to be fair to him, that was considered a weak top of the draft class.
It was.
The weakest, I think, of the last 10 years at the very top.
But generally speaking, if you're the number one overall pick in the NHL draft, you're picking up a lot of pressure because people are looking at the guys that were number one overall in years before you. And for the most part, you're living up to it. But Matthews and McDavid, to me, we're facing more hype and have exceeded what guys in the past have done. I mean, we're to the point now where, I don't know, would you rather have McDavid or Steven Stamkos? You'd rather have McDavid.
Good list of names. I'm going back. I just called up the list while the two of you were filling the podcast. Thank you.
We're filling air.
Auston Matthews, Connor McDavid, Aaron Ekblad, Nathan MacKinnon, Neil Yakupov, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. But, you know, anytime Edmonton picks, it's going to be a problem.
Yeah. So at that point, they've
Taylor Hall now with another team.
But still good, though.
Still good. Yeah. John Tavares, Steven Stamkos, Patrick Kane, Eric Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnson's the other one you can really point to, but he's still a successful NHL player.
Yeah, he's the one that, again, he's never going to live up to number one pick, but he's been in the league a long time.
Yeah. Just going all the way back to 2000, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Marc-Andre Fleury, Rick Nash, Ilya Kovalchuk, and Rick DiPietro.
And that's basically the line. When you start at Rick DiPietro, start with the following year, and pretty much every one of those guys has been.
Since, that's how you qualify it. Since Rick DiPietro,
pretty much. Everybody's been good. Yeah. Who's been the biggest bust? Has it been Yakupov? Now that you read that list,
obviously. It's probably Yakupov, but he also had the lowest expectations, I think, of the group.
But if we dig deeper in that draft, there were some good players taken after him.
Yeah.
As it turns out. So, anyway, Auston Matthews, I know you guys are going to miss not being able to talk about the Auston Matthews returns back to Arizona story that you were both hyping up so much last week.
Yeah. You know what I'm going to miss is talking about, you know, how he played youth hockey here.
He did.
Yeah. And how that shaped him. And all right, I'm not going to start on this.
Don't.
It's the holidays.
Ask about Matthew Tkachuk.
I'm not going to be cynical. Matthew Tkachuk. Yes. That's right. Arizona product, Matthew Tkachuk.
You're going to start not being cynical now?
Yeah, just for a week.
So this is your resolution for the end of 2016?
I'll rev it up again next week.
No, for 2017. Okay.
Yeah.
It's New Year's resolution.
This is the last podcast of 2016. You guys have any?
And apparently the last one Jamie's going to take part in for a while.
For a while, yeah.
His New Year's resolution is to miss as many podcasts as possible.
Participation when he's here, right?
So. That's true.
That's true, yeah. Basically,
Didn't want to say anything, but we're really going to miss him.
I'm going to go have dinner with Steven Stamkos in Tampa.
See if you can get him on the show. All right. Shane Doan, same game as Auston Matthews.
Yeah.
Picks up his 400th goal. And we talk about a guy with a flair for the dramatic. 1,500th NHL game, 400th goal. I thought it was a cool scene having him and Auston Matthews actually take the opening faceoff, not like a ceremonial faceoff. I thought it was especially impressive that Mike Babcock went the extra step to have Matthews out there. Because for whatever reason, Auston Matthews is still technically listed as their third-line center. So it's not like he was guaranteed to start, but he made sure he was out there for it. I don't know, I told Craig this the night of the game. It was interesting to me that a guy like Mike Babcock, who has coached a billion games in this league, who coaches in the whether you want to say it's the self-proclaimed or not, center of the hockey universe in Toronto, and he's got all his own issues to worry about with the Maple Leafs, that it's not lost on him how much Auston Matthews means to this market here, to the point where he would put him out there to take the opening faceoff against Shane Doan.
Yeah, and he embraced it. That's I don't think you weren't there that morning for the availability when Babcock talked. There were so many people I can't even remember.
I was preparing for this show.
Okay. Oh wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
I wasn't going
to
say anything,
but
that's
really
obvious.
Embraced it. It was cool to listen to because you get used to these quotes from Babcock where okay, we're just focusing on the game. We're not going to worry about any of that. But he said it's a big story for us too. Here's a kid who's a big part of our team and has a chance to be a big part of our franchise, and is a special kid. And the guys like him, and he plays hard for us. We want him to walk out of here proud. That was a great quote. And he told him, he said, go ahead, embrace it, enjoy it. Why wouldn't you enjoy that moment?
It's refreshing to see that sort of just common sense and just sort of human moment from a coach. You wouldn't expect it necessarily to come from Mike Babcock, but as we're establishing, this is the bizarro year in the NHL when John Tortorella's teams score thousands of goals and win 12 in a row. And
I'm sure Peter Holland and Frank Corrado were like, wait a minute.
Yeah, we should give the update. Frank Corrado did not play that night.
Shocking.
Or any night ever.
So Mike Babcock still isn't the warm, cuddly guy we thought he was.
Yeah.
No. Just for one day.
Maybe he's waiting for just the right time to play Frank Corrado. But most likely not. Anyway, Shane Doan, 400th goal. Were you shocked at all? We were talking before the game downstairs. There's no way Doan doesn't score tonight, right? This is exactly when he's going to score.
Exactly. But we have so much else to write about tonight. He's going to... I was sitting next to Jerry Brown from NHL.com, and as soon as Doan scored, was under a minute in the second period, right?
Yeah.
He buries that puck. Jerry looks at me and goes, there goes your night.
Jerry. Well, I enjoyed it because I didn't have to write anything.
But it's classic. It is.
Flair for the dramatic.
He does have a flair for the dramatic in these big moments, and it was great to see. At the same time, I know it's been a really frustrating year for him, and I don't know what you guys are seeing. I can't help but wonder if this is the end of the line for Shane Doan. It's been a difficult season on him emotionally as much as it has, you know, with his performance on the ice. It's, you know, they're not having success. It's another year where they're not going to make the playoffs. I'm not sure how close they are to making the playoffs. So how long does he have to commit? Do they even want him around past this season anymore? Let's be blunt on that too.
Yeah, I mean,
pushing this youth movement.
It's so tough because, you know, he did play well for big stretches of last season. And, you know, he's not, again, on a game-to-game basis, has not played incredibly well this year. And, you know, he's mentioned it as well. But I think maybe even the bigger factor than that is they don't – even if they're still rebuilding, it looks, at least on ice, like they've taken a minor, maybe a big step back and I'm not sure Shane Doan's going to want to commit, because I don't get the sense from him that he's going to do what some other players have done, like in the NFL, I mean, like Andre Johnson, for example. And again, it's not to crush him. He's a great guy that like buys toys for kids for Christmas.
He
but,
listens to our podcast every week, too.
But where, you know, he tried to make a comeback, and then about 3-4 weeks in the season goes, can't do it, I'm out. I don't see Shane Doan doing that. I think he's going to, I mean, talk about another guy in town, that Larry Fitzgerald might have to make that same call of, do I really want to commit to another full year of this?
Yes, $11 million.
Well, Shane will not be getting $11 million, so that's a big...
Shane has no contract. This is coming back.
That was actually Craig's demand for if he's going to do episode 66 next week.
$11
million? Yeah.
I just, you know, his role has decreased. You can see that his ice time is down. So I know he's frustrated about that, too. What player wouldn't be, right? Especially somebody who's been around and accomplished what he's accomplished. And I know there's still this chatter out there that maybe because of this situation, he'll get so frustrated that he will accept a trade. And I mean, he even said it the other day, you never say never. I still don't see it happening. I think that's frustration as much as anything when Shane's talking. Because if he goes to another team, what's his role going to look like with that team? It's not like somebody's plugging him into their top six.
It's not, his role's not going to change.
Your role isn't going to change going to another team. And I think it is, you know, less emotional moments he probably realizes that. And he also realizes the legacy that he has here. You can't just take that. You're not going to walk into someone's locker room, even though the players know who Shane Doan is.
Yeah.
He's not going to have nearly the impact on that locker room that he has on.
Not in the middle of a season either. I mean, there's a transition. Yeah, exactly.
And not if he's not going to be highly productive right away.
See, the thing is, I still think I'm not even going to try and like specify any individual team, but I think if the Coyotes were winning right now, if they were a team that is number two in the Pacific or something, they were a winning team, I think Shane Doan can be productive on a winning team. But he's just in a spot right now where he's got a lot of guys around him that skate really fast, and that's never been him, but he's got a lot of guys that skate really fast, so it's making him look slower. And also, those guys aren't always skating where they should be skating anyway. So if you plugged him on some veteran team that was challenging for a cup this year, I think he's still useful. And in that regard, I think if the Coyotes were winning this year, I think this would be a completely different narrative. I don't think we'd be looking at Shane Doan and saying, well, he's just done. He's just – it's a weird situation, but I also think it's a situation he probably expected when he came back.
Yeah, to an extent. I always wonder how much players buy into the talk in the offseason, the team saying it wants to compete for a playoff spot, and we're injecting all these young, exciting players. Okay, you look at what happened last year with Domi and Duclair, and you say, okay –
yeah,
if we get a little bit more, maybe we'll be even better. But you look at the forwards they plugged in this year, nobody's made that kind of impact.
I don't think he signed up for another year just flat out expecting to miss the playoffs. I just think I'm sure he expected there would be growing pains. But you're right. You don't anticipate Max Domi getting hurt and missing a month or two or whatever it's going to be. And you don't anticipate Anthony Duclair, who looked like their best scorer in years at times last year, having one goal 34 games into the year.
Yeah,
and nobody could have anticipated that.
Like I said, the rookie forwards that they plugged into the lineup, there have been some decent contributions, but nothing close to what Duclair did last year.
And unfortunately, the rookie forwards that are making those contributions are making them in the bottom six.
Yeah,
they're filling those roles that they should, but they're not being the impact top six forwards that I think they hope they would be. And, you know, it's one thing to miss the playoffs. It's one thing to not quite make there. It's another thing to be unexciting, uninteresting, and feeling almost, like, hopeless for this season.
Yeah,
like, where do you look to and say, okay, no, this will get better once this changes? I don't see it this year.
You can't, especially when you're looking at the issues that they have at the center position.
Yeah.
They're still there. I mean, Peter Holland, fine. That's a desperate move.
Yeah.
When you go out and claim Peter Holland, that means your center position's in bad shape.
You can find your fourth line guys anywhere. Like you can. I'm glad that Peter Holland is doing a good. You know, playing fairly well. I'm glad Lawson Cross is playing fairly well, and he has more upside as a former first rounder. But those guys are a dime a dozen. You see those guys sign one-year, $1 million contracts every single season. You don't need to fill out your bottom six.
I think Krause is legitimately.
I mean, Peter Holland's here to fill Brad Richardson's position.
Spot.
That's fine.
That's what's going on.
And he's doing it.
But again, you went into the season banking so much on what Dylan Strome and Christian Dvorak were going to give you that Brad Richardson suddenly became an indispensable vital piece of your lineup. But then and that's, you can't be in that
the
situation.
The counterpoint to that, though, is you have to be able to point to somebody that was available in the offseason and say, oh, they should have gone out and signed so-and-so. If the guys aren't there, the guys aren't there.
Or you should have made a trade, maybe. But, yeah, again.
But that's easier said than done.
Or you can simply understand that this is really year one of the rebuild, yeah, and they probably knew deep down that this was going to happen. They knew they were going to be in this situation. You have to talk playoffs with your fan base as a marketing.
You have to.
From the marketing standpoint.
Well, and you can. I mean, we've seen teams in this position make the playoffs, too. I don't think it was just a complete fabrication.
Well, I don't think this season is the issue. This season's not the issue. The issue is Strome going to take another step forward? Is Dvorak going to take another step forward as the season goes on? And, you know, I know Tippett said game after game after game that he's seeing improvement in Dvorak's game. I don't see it.
Well, he's still
he's young.
Years old. I mean, he's,
I would, you know, if you're looking for him to be a top six center, I think you and I both agree he's probably not.
Yeah.
I don't see that transformation coming. I think he could be a good player. I think he can be a third line center.
But yeah,
I think that's Christian Dvorak's upside.
But I mean, you've got the McKinnises of the world. You've got the Dauphins of the world. At some point, you need an impact top six forward.
They have bottom six centers.
Yeah, and it's not that necessarily the player is bad, but
you still need those guys.
You absolutely, I'm not trying to say Dvorak's not a good player. I'm saying what they need him to be soon-ish, maybe not this season, but in the next few seasons, at least a second-line caliber center.
Right. Where are the guys with the offensive impact on the game, consistent offensive impact on the game?
One of them's not scoring and one's hurt. I mean,
be real, they were bad before that happened, too.
Well, yeah, but you're saying they're not exciting to watch. If Domi and Duclair are going, this is a more exciting team than a lot of the teams towards the bottom of the
standings. Yeah, but I meant exciting. Like, if this was, again, if it was like last year and Dvorak and Strome were making Domi Duclair-like impacts last year, even if they were 5 points out of a playoff spot, there's a little bit more excitement, there's more hype around the team, there's more feeling, not only for this season, but going forward. Being stuck in this spot where, yes, Domi's hurt, but Duclair's not performing, you're not getting the top offensive impact from those rookies, you start to, it's a little draining.
Yeah, I can't argue the fact that they would be more exciting if Dylan Strome had 15 goals right now. I'm completely with you on that. Dvorak, I mean, it's difficult to gauge rookies in the NHL when you see Auston Matthews step in and do what he's doing or Connor McDavid step in and do what he's doing. But it's not going to shock me if Christian Dvorak a year or two from now is a 20-goal scorer. That's not going to stun me because he hasn't scored a ton of goals in his first 30 NHL games.
It's incredibly early, too, so we don't know. But you start to, as you see the, particularly the center position, you see Strome's and you see Dvorak's come up. There was the idea of what those players could be, and now as the picture slowly starts to get more clear, you start to wonder how far is the actual away from what the idea was.
Right.
And there's very little margin for error at that position to be wrong.
You see flashes?
But isn't,
shouldn't you have seen flashes from one of those two guys?
Isn't that
they
more
had
on
this, in
Strome,
this,
though?
Sure.
Did you guys really expect Dvorak to be the second round pick?
Yeah.
It's almost like this, whoa, we look at this find.
It is more on Strome.
Absolutely.
But the reality is they needed one of those. I mean, we were talking all training camp. What if both these guys make the roster? Now we're talking, can one of these guys be a top six center?
He is 19. Yeah, he's got to develop. He clearly has to get physically stronger. So we'll see what sort of impact that has on his game. But I go back to, I didn't see flashes. I was unimpressed with Dylan Strome in training camp. I haven't seen the flashes from him offensively that make me think, okay, with some development, he could be a top-line center. I haven't seen it. I could be wrong.
And that's a number three pick.
He's
in a different category than Dvorak because he's a number three pick.
Yes.
You expect that player to make at least flashes of impact fairly quickly.
But see, I've never thought his game is something where you're going to watch him in training camp and be like, oh, he looks great in training camp.
Well,
I think
I'm
it's
not looking for him to skate up and down the ice. Clearly, he's not going to skate up and down the ice and do things that way. But I want to see examples of his incredible vision or his incredible stick skills. I just didn't see that. I didn't get excited about his game. And again, I could be
wrong.
It's way early.
Reserving judgment on Strome.
But how much longer do you give him? Is it 2 years? If this hasn't happened in 2 years?
If he's not contributing for this team by the end of next season, I will. And contributing is not 40 goals. Contributing is this is a guy that's a legit.
Right.
Even if he's a number two center, I'm fine with that. I get what you're saying. He was the third overall pick. You want him to be a number one center, but maybe he just isn't. He's not a waste of a pick if he's the number two center.
No, and I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is they still need a number one center, and I haven't seen proof.
They do, but those.
And he hid that he can be that guy.
They don't grow on trees.
No,
you got to win the lottery if you're going to draft one, basically.
Or trade with Shirelli.
Or trade with Shirelli. Because there's not. We went through this list a couple weeks ago. Who of those guys that you had on your list, Craig, were not taken in the first pick or two of a draft? Just Mark Scheifele.
One, two, or three.
Just Scheifele. He's the only one I can think of. He was seventh.
And the reality is the Coyotes got unbelievably unlucky.
And
to miss out on all of those top players. I mean, they got unbelievably unlucky.
Alex Wenberg was the number 14 overall pick, by the way.
Yeah. But, see, I can absolutely see Strome doing what Wenberg's doing. But Wenberg's around a bunch of players that are all also producing at the exact same time.
Yep.
I mean, you could pick up a lot of assists.
There are a list of problems with the current crop of Coyotes at the moment.
But if you put Strome on Columbus in Wenberg's role, he's producing.
I don't think he's playing yet.
But he's not out there and not producing. It's one or the other. He's either still a junior or he's just out there and passing to Saad or whoever is. Columbus scores 7, 8, 9, 10 goals in some of these games. You're going to pick up points. It's not taking anything away from Alex Wenberg, but I don't think he's an elite number one center yet.
I'm not convinced of that yet.
No, but.
All right. Blackhawks?
Artemi Panarin's going to make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
But you act like you're surprised by this.
Well, it's not that I'm surprised. It's just how he's elevated his game to another level, which, yikes, in year two.
Again, he's in a very good position, and he's an extremely talented player. I think it's harder to have a sophomore slump when everybody on the other team's keying in on Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews when he's healthy.
Yeah, when he's leading the team in points.
Yeah.
He's leading the Blackhawks in points. Artemi Panarin is a point-a-game guy.
And I think he's finally, as weird as it sounds, finally starting to get some of the respect he deserves because he's doing it again. Because the easy narrative is to say, oh, well, you know, he's got talent around him. At some point, everybody on Chicago has talent around him, and nobody's doing what Artemi Panarin's doing.
And you mentioned the injuries, too. You know, they broke up that line for a while.
Yeah.
Kane hasn't always played with Artemi Panarin this year. Toews has been out of the lineup for a good chunk. Artem Anisimov's been out of the lineup. He just keeps producing.
He's a very good player.
He's a special player. So what are they going to have to pay him? And how are they going to do it? They need to move a big contract.
Well, that is a great question. I don't know how they're going
to
do this.
They need to move a big contract, I think.
And they're going to have to
keep moving. Are they going to have to try and have someone take Brent Seabrook? That's probably what they have to do. Or you let go of yet another effective bottom six player like Marcus Kruger and try and trade him.
Yeah, but just do that. I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of like what Jamie was just saying. It's not like Marcus Kruger isn't valuable. But how valuable is Marcus Kruger on Colorado right now?
Just pray Las Vegas takes Marian Hossa off your hands.
He's having a good year, too.
Marian Hossa has a no move.
No, does he have full no? Does he still have a full no move in this final part? Oh, he does, doesn't he? Yeah. Let's see.
You're going to be paying.
Not that he hasn't been good, but that contract is going to, I mean.
Yeah, Hossa's been very good this year, but it's going to hurt them down the road.
Yeah, I don't really know what you're going to do, but I'm confident that they'll pull it off.
I know people talk that way about Stan Bowman, like he can just pull a rabbit out of the hat every year, but at a certain point, you're out of options.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they said that, and sometimes he's done it, but then sometimes Brandon Saad goes to Columbus.
Yeah, but and I hear that, and Brandon Saad's obviously
Teravainen goes to Carolina.
But are you concerned they're going to lose Panarin?
No, I think they'll do whatever the hell they have to do to keep him. But I'm wondering what sort of impact it makes on their roster again.
But either way, you're still going to have Panarin, Kane, Toews, Keith.
Yes.
So you're in a better spot than 90% of the teams in the league, and that's. You know, that's assuming. I would assume you're going to have an Anisimov too. Is he a possibility? I guess that you could trade. He's $4.5 million a year.
I can't imagine them trading him. They've been trying to get a second line center.
Yeah,
for so long.
That's a good contract too.
And he's having a terrific year.
And you can't trade Hossa, so you're going to have
two loaded top six lines.
Yeah, it's going to have to be Seabrook.
So you can fill in the pieces around.
Or Kruger.
Brent Seabrook's contract runs through
forever.
The next millennium.
Yeah, at $6.875 million. Yeah, good luck.
Big number to move. I don't know how you move it.
You maybe move Kruger, but then kill another penalty ever again.
It doesn't matter, though. Those are the pieces.
No, it does kind of matter, though.
Yeah, Brent Seabrook signed through 2024.
But am I out of line here? If you're sitting there saying, well, we get to have Panarin and Anisimov and Kane and Toews and Hossa and Keith, and we can keep Seabrook and we have Crawford, but we had to give up Kruger, those are the breaks.
I mean, that's what you have to do, but then there are worse team than they were before that happened.
They are.
And again, with Chicago, we are splitting cup or no cup.
That's fair.
We're not splitting are they good, are they made. We're splitting a very specific can they win the cup. And at some point,
I guess if you at some point
they need better defense and they need to kill penalties, and at some point if you keep taking those players off that team, they're just not going to be able to do it.
You think if a couple of the younger guys that they brought onto their blue line turn into decent defensemen, they might still be okay. But yeah, now you're taking you've always had three defensemen that you could rely on at least, and if you take one out, then
yeah.
But they don't have options. It's not like there's something where they can just freeze their roster and say, no, we get to keep all these guys. So if
no,
the trade-off
they have to do something.
Give up Kruger.
Losing Panarin is a disaster, too. It's a complete disaster.
You can replace Kruger. You can't replace Panarin.
Yeah. I can't help wondering if they just believe that the cap was going to go up more than it has over the last few years.
They probably did.
Banked on that.
But at a certain point, too, I think they're just saying, we've got star players that other teams would kill for. We're going to keep that core, and we're going to fill in the pieces around it. I mean, how many times have we seen the Patriots juggle things around in the NFL? Okay, well, we've got Brady. We'll build around that, basically. And it's not like there's 10 Marcus Krugers out there, but you have a better chance of finding somebody that can be 80% of him than somebody that can be 80% of Panarin. It's
correct.
The only way you can do it, it seems to be working for them. But I agree.
What's he going to make? I've seen $6 million thrown around.
$6 million is what I thought, and honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if he was asking for more.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be.
There are some mediocre.
He's an RFA,
players.
So he's going to get his value is going to be artificially lowered.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
He's a restricted free agent.
Yeah,
so
his value is going to be a little lowered. But I mean, I think he could very well. I mean, what did Saad get? Six by six.
Yeah.
I think
wouldn't
that's
you rather have him than Saad.
I think that's right around the range.
I like a lot of Brandon Saad's game, though. I like a lot of the stuff he does.
But if you have to pick one or the other.
I mean, Saad would give some tape somebody to play with.
That's true.
Yeah, Brandon Saad's AAV is $6 million.
So I think we're looking around that. 5 to 6 years, it's six two.
Hard salary cap.
Now, you can sell me that a couple years down the line they're going to be in trouble because of contracts like the Seabrook one that's just going to keep going and going. And at some point, these guys aren't going to be superstars.
Yeah, at some point, you're going to get diminishing return. And most importantly, at some point, Taves and Kane are going to age.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're okay. I think they probably look at it as a window.
And you know what? They've got three.
Yeah.
If they win another one. That's what you do this for. I mean, reality, if you win one, if you risk it all 1 year and you win, that was worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth being in cap hell for 2 or 3 years because the whole point is to win a cup. And they've won multiple.
Man, if they get one more, I'd do that.
And even if they don't,
they cement their legacy.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe they do anyway. It's really hard to win in this era, in the salary cap era.
Even if they don't, there's no way to look at this as anything but an overwhelming success.
Yeah, I guess maybe you can make a case that if they don't win another one and then they're terrible in 4 years, they don't cement their legacy necessarily. But to Jamie's point, they're definitely successful. Yeah. Because would you rather be the team that even has one cup and then is terrible for a couple of years, or the team that makes the playoffs every year and somehow gets to the second round sometimes and then back to the first? Basically, would you rather be the Blackhawks or the Blues?
Yeah.
Also, they don't hand out trophies for great cap management. All right.
No, but they should.
The whole point of the managing your cap is to do what you can to then win a cup. I mean, it's ultimately – I think sometimes that gets lost where in a few different sports with cups and with prospects as well, that I think the end game sometimes gets lost by the idea.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It was very deep, but I would agree with it.
It's more sometimes with prospects. Well, I won't trade this prospect for an established star when, best case scenario, that guy is this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Take this guy.
Yeah. No, that's
– So there's a lot of things that go with that. But ultimately, the goal is to win the championship, and however you do it, even if it means a couple years where you don't win it.
Even if they don't win it this year, they're legitimate contenders, whereas 20 teams in this league are not legitimate contenders to actually win the cup this year.
The Western Conference playoffs this year, I have no idea what's happening.
Do you think we'll have any clarity by the time the playoffs actually start?
Maybe. It's still you still have
a lot of time.
I think 2 more months, you probably have a much better idea. But if it looks like it looks now, could just be somebody getting hot.
Yeah.
And there are probably a bunch of teams, like going back to Dallas, if Dallas gets healthy – and they can start playing the way they were playing at the end, last year.
Yeah.
Who scares them going into the playoffs?
No.
Who don't you want to play in the Western Conference? Where you say, whoa, there's no way we can take out that team.
Yeah.
I don't see a team in the West.
If you're a Blackhawks fan, I'd be pulling for Dallas to not get in. Because you're right. If everybody plays their best and you're looking at a 7-game series, Dallas scares me a lot more from Chicago's perspective.
If they're healthy.
Yeah. Them at their best. And that's a series I just want to watch. I just want to see every game be 6-5 in a playoff series. Like, that to me would be entertaining. More so than, you know, Minnesota scoring a goal or two against Chicago in the first three games and being out before they even get back to Minnesota, wow. Basically.
Still taking down the Wild. Okay.
I think Minnesota could make a run through the West, but they need to avoid Chicago. You know how that's just that way in the NFL. Like, there's certain teams that could go, like the Kansas City Chiefs are a real good football team. They're not beating the Patriots in a one game. They're not. We've seen this before.
Well, because the Patriots are a significantly better football team.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I'm not sure the Blackhawks are a significantly better hockey team than the Wild.
But we've seen this. And Minnesota didn't go out and add anybody amazing. This is the same team that lost them.
Terrific year.
Eric Stahl's really helpful. They changed their coach and their strategy. I mean, I think that means more than.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I would prefer to watch Chicago play somebody else in round one.
Well, so would I, of course. Anyone.
You wouldn't rather see them play Minnesota?
Oh, I'd like to see Chicago play someone else that I felt a little better about.
Yeah.
I think Minnesota's a dangerous team.
Who's the team in the Central that you would, like, here, how about just rank these teams that you would rather play or not play?
And I don't want to face the Blues.
You don't want to face the Blues. That makes sense to me. Nashville, Minnesota, Dallas, Winnipeg.
Dallas, it depends on which Dallas team we're talking about. If Dallas is on a run.
Well, they have to be, probably, to get into the playoffs.
They're scary, too, then.
They're scary.
They gave the Blackhawks fits last year.
So Nashville, Winnipeg, or Minnesota? Like, Minnesota's starting to climb that list of teams.
I take Nashville. I know Winnipeg gives them trouble in the regular season, but I don't believe Winnipeg beats them in a playoff series.
They would adjust over the course of seven games.
Yeah.
All right, we have to talk World Juniors. And we have to talk outdoor games.
We don't have to.
I'm just going to keep pushing these.
Okay.
All right.
So, the World Juniors start today. They're going as we speak.
I believe
the U.S. is playing Latvia.
They are.
Is that game already started?
If it hasn't started, it's going to start very shortly.
Mega ratings.
Thank you.
Mega ratings.
If somebody said to the two of you, you have to watch the World Juniors or one of these outdoor games, which one are you watching?
Outdoor game.
I'll watch the outdoor game.
Really? Okay. Just because it's an NHL game that actually...
Yeah.
So you guys both just hate the World Juniors?
No, it's not that I hate them.
This year just feels kind of meh.
Yeah, it is. It's just, it doesn't register.
This year specifically?
Here's the thing, and I think this for me personally, I grew up in Chicago, and it's a big league town. Now, college sports don't have a foothold in Chicago. Nobody really cares about it.
Mostly because they all suck.
It's either the highest level of the sport, or it just doesn't matter that much.
That's kind of where I am. In years past, there were so many big name prospects. And I don't feel like it has quite the level of star power this year.
I would give you that. I think that's the biggest reason.
Also, maybe this is, again, and maybe nobody else thinks this way, but I think the World Cup of Hockey actually hurts this. You get that nationalism hockey tournament out of the way like 2 months ago. And I know it's a different tournament, but how do you watch the under-23 team then watch this? You're getting a much better product over there. And that's the same gimmick.
But it's the same way as watching the NFL as opposed to college football. Like, you know, college football is not as good, but people still watch it. It's still a big deal.
Because people went to those colleges. There's a different sense of belonging than there is for that.
And there's probably not,
that.
Yeah, you're probably right. There's not the tie to, oh, my world junior hockey team is playing. Right
yeah.
Now. I got to follow.
I think it's a combination. I think the biggest thing is the lack of star power.
I would buy into
that
argument.
That's one. I think
more.
Two is you already had a national tournament.
Had this mean so much more to me than the World Cup? It's not even close.
It should mean more, but it's kind of like I feel when they have the World Juniors and the World Championship, where I much more enjoy the World Juniors. By the time World Championship stuff rolls around, like I've seen it.
See, to me, international competition, I care about the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Olympics would be number one.
I don't care about the others.
But I also think this is a lot more unpredictable, which
sure.
I think you...
Give you that.
Unfortunately, you lose a lot in hockey in terms of that unpredictability when you get on the international stage because... There's realistically, five teams that ever win gold medals at this point? What, Finland, Sweden, U.S., Russia, Canada? And really, when you get to the best of the best, it always just seems to be Canada and maybe Sweden.
Yeah, and I think the NHL can help with this by promoting these young guys more. I mean, you look at how popular the NFL and the NBA drafts in particular are and the hype that surrounds them leading up. I think that the NHL can capitalize, again, if they ever want to promote individual players ever again, since apparently that's something that they say they never want to do, because, you know, God forbid people watch their game.
Jamie is especially bitter.
But this is an area where they could give your casual hockey fan a reason. Why should I care about this 16-year-old skating at 2:00 on a Monday? Well, this person could go in the first round, and if he goes in the first round, he can make this kind of an impact. I mean, there's just, I feel like there's such a lack of connection there that if there aren't the star names of players, either, you know, like a McDavid or an Austin Matthews that everybody knows that are going really high, or, hey, I want to see this one prospect on my favorite team play, then people are like, yeah, I don't really care.
How much of McDavid and Matthews ruined junior hockey or you know, prospects coming in for the next couple of years?
Because nobody can live up?
Yeah, everybody's going to measure.
Well, you're right.
And maybe nobody's saying they are as good as them. But
it's not just those two. I mean, there were years back where you'd pay good money to watch McKinnon and Drouin play in those situations. And I just feel like there's just a lack of star power right now. Maybe it's because it's a down-ish year for the draft, but it felt like the last – and we've had some of the number one picks, but it feels like the last 4 or 5 years there were – several that even casual fans could name big name prospects playing in this tournament.
But a lot of these guys, like Patrick Laine, wasn't supposed to be the number two pick until the World Juniors last year.
No, but he's somebody that emerged.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
Comes out, but that's not going to help your ratings while it's happening.
Well, what you could do is you could watch the World Junior preview show that I watched last night, which, did you guys see this? I'm guessing not.
No, of course not. Okay.
Well, I just had it on.
It was Christmas.
It's just like 11 o'clock at night.
Okay.
That still makes it Christmas.
I can't work with. Oh well, excuse me. Family's more important than junior hockey.
U.S. and Latvia are tied 1-1 right now.
Anyway, watching the preview that was the TSN preview. It wasn't the NHL Network preview.
Of course not.
Hour long preview.
God forbid they put something on their own network that they create.
Not. This has to be Jamie's saltiest episode ever.
I don't agree because nobody else cares. I don't understand how that network runs itself prior to MLB Advanced Media or now. I don't get it. It's not that hard.
Well, anyway, that's a whole different topic for a different show. They showed
it's your league. You have access to everything.
They showed the TSN preview, and it was literally an hour long, and they literally spoke about players that aren't on Canada for less than 1 minute. In an hour-long preview.
Well, to be fair, it's a Canadian show.
That's fine. But if we're flipping this around and we're doing a preview of... I know you're going to say that we wouldn't do a World Junior preview in the U.S., but TSN's their ESPN. So if ESPN's doing some sort of international tournament preview, they're not going to mention some of the other players that might
they
be...
So when they do, like, USA Basketball, they mention the Gasols.
How much the NHL cares about this tournament. I think this is a Canadian interest, and that's about it. I just don't think there's widespread interest outside Canada.
Yeah.
So fine, give the, you know, play to your audience.
I need Sebastian.
Lots
here.
Of Canadians.
Sebastian will be on my side.
Not too many others.
They care in Sweden.
They don't care in the U.S.
Yeah, but we're not in Sweden.
You guys don't care. Maybe one out of three people in the U.S. cares.
Well, there's one out of three people
one
in this
out of
room
three
cares.
In the U.S. cares about the World Juniors.
One out of three hockey fans in the
no,
U.S.
No, just one out of three people in this room.
I'll even take that bet. I'll bet it's not one out of three.
I don't know how we're going to prove this.
I don't know.
How about this? I'm right. Does that work?
Let's hire a public opinion.
Yeah, there's
a private
take a poll.
We know we can. Rely on those statistics.
We need a Gallup poll.
Well, they predicted the presidential election.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's all coming out here.
Are we going to get, like, the whisper vote? I don't want to tell people I like the World Juniors, but I do.
Yes.
is that what's going to happen?
I can't admit that I like World Juniors
because it's not good for
us. Think less of me.
Yeah. I'm embarrassed. But
deservedly so. Yeah. But
maybe just, like, an informal internet poll because those never lie.
SurveyMonkey.com.
To your earlier point, though, it's really – imagine being the number one pick in this year's draft. What that's going to feel like. There's no way you're living up.
Yeah,
you're
no.
not Connor McDavid.
And he's not playing
Matthews.
In this tournament. Nolan Patrick's not playing in the World Juniors.
Right. But even so, coming into the draft, the expectations for the team that takes him, regardless of reality, of what everyone's telling you in the scouting report, that fan base still wants you to be as good as those two guys that came
before.
You can't do it.
Not going to happen.
It's a really hard situation to be in.
Sorry
Vancouver. Nolan Patrick is not as good.
Which Canadian team are we talking about?
As Connor McDavid. Yes. It's got to be even tougher if you're in Vancouver because
you're looking at your other Canadian brothers. This might be the year that they allow an American team to jump in and get the first pick.
Yeah, it'll be Arizona. We know
Colorado
the
again.
Player.
Is it going to be Colorado again?
Could be Colorado.
It'll probably be Arizona, so we can just twist nice a little bit more in the fan base. Oh yeah, well at least
you got the first pick. What are you talking about?
It was within one of those three years, right? You just got the third year.
Like,
so
I don't even care if they give it to Edmonton this year.
Well, Edmonton's going to make the playoffs. That would be a little awkward if Edmonton got the first pick, too. I would care at that point.
We'll finally be able to expose the conspiracy.
Yeah.
Something would be up.
They'll trade for some team's first-round pick for some reason, and then...
They will.
Then they'll get it.
They'll trade, well...
Connor McDavid.
Yeah. Probably not doing that. In terms of star power, Craig, I know you feel strongly about this. Wouldn't there be more star power if NHL teams had to give their junior players to their host countries?
Were you the one that brought it up to me at the game, or was it someone else?
I think it might have been somebody else, because I try not to talk about world juniors.
I'm not going to call out where I read this, but there was actually a column written from a fairly reputable media outlet suggesting that the Coyotes should have allowed Lawson Crouse to go play.
Can I just ask you this one question?
That was one question.
This, starting now, was this a reputable media outlet based in Canada or the U.S.? Okay. Because
upset of the century.
Yeah, well, I've heard this too, and I've even actually talked to somebody not from that outlet but from Canada about this, because they asked, hey, Lawson Crouse isn't scoring a lot of goals. Why do the Coyotes need him right now? You're not watching him play. We would all agree in this room, whether you think the Coyotes have issues or not, Lawson Crouse has gotten significantly better over the last 2 to 3 weeks.
Also,
I don't care if he's scoring. I don't care if he has zero goals. If he's in their starting lineup, if he's in their lineup on a nightly basis, you don't say, hey, you know what? We're just going to take you out of the lineup and throw you in the World Juniors.
Exactly.
Because, hey, we want to help out that team. What?
No, it's not that
he's
team.
He's being paid. He's a professional. Yeah. He has a job. If you don't just say, yeah, go ahead, leave.
If he was not Canadian, this would not ever come
no,
up.
No, of course
moronic
not.
Moronic stance to take. It's just moronic.
It makes
you
no sense.
Answer my also, question before I can even ask it.
What incentive do the Coyotes have to do anything like that?
They don't. And again, is he not getting better?
Sure
he
is.
To me, he's actually improving by playing in the NHL.
Yes, and he's playing. He is playing. Again, he's in their starting lineup. Yeah. He's part.
If he was Frank Corrado, then yeah, maybe you say
a drop of the puck. But you know, he's in one of their top four lines. He's playing. He has made it to the NHL. No, you don't go play in the World Juniors anymore.
So
just because you're eligible,
you've made it.
Is the thinking then? Well, we're not seeing him play, so we're just glancing at his stats really quick, and that's why we think that he'd be better off in junior?
I have not delved deeply into the line of thinking.
Or we think he'd help Team Canada, and we want him.
It's the latter.
Okay.
It's the latter.
Yeah, no. I think they don't care. It's, oh, he would help us. We don't care about that team.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's as simple as that.
I was hoping that wasn't the case, but
you know better.
Yeah. Winter Classic or Centennial Classic? Which one fires you up more?
Do I even have to answer that?
Yeah, no, actually,
probably that like Minnesota Columbus game that's happening in a few days would fire me up more.
Wow, that's a good game. Are you gonna watch that game?
What day is that on?
New Year's Eve.
I'll be in the air. Flying to Tampa.
New Year's Eve?
Not on the air. In the air.
What time on New Year's Eve? I'll be at the
I will be.
So yeah, I'll be watching that game.
As he curses Ohio State from the press box.
That'll be the only thing Columbus fans have to cheer for that day.
Ohio State will be down by.
Oh boy, you could curse both Columbus teams at the same time. Wow. It's going to be a bad night for Columbus.
Where is that game? Is that in Minnesota?
No idea.
I don't know. Either way.
I don't want to look that up.
Well, the Centennial Classic is Toronto-Detroit from Toronto, and the Winter Classic is not on New Year's this year. It's Chicago-St. Louis from St. Louis.
Yes.
That's a better game.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the better of the two.
It is. It's always a spectacle. It's.
But yeah, I mean, I don't.
And then the stadium series in February, Flyers Penguins.
But yeah, I
that's
don't care
just gonna
much.
Be a fight outside.
It will. It's the Flyers.
Yeah, it'll be an outdoor can't fight instead of an indoor fight. Especially those two teams, like Pittsburgh. Oh, yeah. There's no team that makes the Penguins lose their cool better than the Flyers.
Well, and also those the latter two, the Central Division one and the Pens Flyers matter. I mean, those are big games.
That's true
for teams that are in playoff contention.
You don't think Toronto's making the playoffs?
I don't think either of those teams are making the playoffs.
Well, we know how you feel about Detroit. That's why I didn't frame the question that way. All right. Anything else here before we wrap up? Any thoughts as we head towards the second, I don't know, period of the season? It's not the second half yet, but we're coming out of the All-Star break or the holiday break.
One quick question.
Yes.
Do we think Jonathan Quick is the only problem with L.A.? Because I don't.
No.
And I don't understand that team.
I'm with you. I don't think he's the only problem, but I think he can fix a lot.
Like, LA is a team everyone's going to go, oh, man, I don't want to play them in the postseason. Really? Are you sure?
Might not have to.
Yeah, one, you might not have to, and two, we're like, are you sure?
I think Quick, when he comes back, will cover up a lot of issues. How's that for answering your question?
What are those issues, though?
I don't know.
That they sold their soul to the devil?
Well, I mean, that's
one. Kopitar has 3 goals.
Yeah.
I think there is something to the fact that they're not playing an outdated style of hockey, but they're not. They haven't adjusted or adapted as quickly as some of these other teams are. Like, Pittsburgh won the Cup last year mainly with speed. And you start to look at some of these other teams that are up near the top, they all have speed. Like Columbus can skate.
LA's got some of it.
But not enough. They have a lot of players that were They were built around the win a couple years ago.
I just don't see the depth.
Yeah, I mean, their blue line. Their blue line was an issue last year in particular, and it is still. They're just not. They're not as deep as they were.
How about
their second cup run was the best team. I mean, they got hot for that first run, but they weren't.
Their top of the line players weren't. It's probably easy to say their top of the line players aren't as good as Chicago, so they can't carry them.
They're not. They have one.
Through a lack of depth.
They have one. I like Toffoli, but he's not an elite player. Jeff Carter's not an elite. Yeah.
Jeff Carter's been their best player.
Jeff Carter's been really good, but he's not one of the 15 best players in the league.
They were built to win. When they won cups, they were winning low-scoring games. It's a high-scoring league now.
Yeah.
And so what the games that they were winning 2-1 or 3-2 in the past, those games are now 5-3 or 4-3.
It doesn't feel like they can clamp down on.
And we've talked about their possession, particularly last year, but the other, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, who has the puck, but the other piece of that is what do you do once you have it? It's nice to have it all the time, even though they don't have it quite as much now as they had in your past, where they were blowing everybody away.
Take it and go home.
But you have to then do something with it.
Yeah,
that's where the talent aspect of it comes in.
Look, their run was a success. They won two Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
To your earlier point, but I just don't think they have the ability. Some nights you have to be able to beat a team. Now in this league, you need to be able to score 4 or 5 goals on some nights, and the Kings can do it occasionally. I mean, they're still a decent team, but. Is there any chance they win the Stanley Cup this year?
I don't fear that team. LA doesn't come to town. You go, wow, that team's going to put up 4 or 5 goals and
slow slide. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, we've heard talk for now.
Executive, what do you do with this team? What are you thinking with this team?
And we've heard for a year and a half now rumblings and rumors, and people don't put their names to it, but issues that they've had with Sutter.
Well, yeah, I mean, this
the locking him out of the locker room stuff. I mean, again, it's never just one thing, but you start to wonder now: is this okay? Has the window closed for their cup window, and they need to start taking their core pieces and adding other pieces around them? But a reshuffle.
This something like with Pittsburgh? Is there a coach out there that all of a sudden, if LA makes a switch here in 3? Look, Daryl Sutter's a great coach. He's won 2 cups. I'm not saying that he needs to be fired. But if the Kings just felt that that was the situation, if they both just decided to part ways, is this team a team where if you brought in just the right coach, he could unlock them the way – Sullivan unlocked the Penguins? Because people were writing Pittsburgh off last year.
I don't think Daryl Sutter's the issue here.
No, I don't.
Well, that's not even so much that Sutter's the issue. It's just with the players.
I don't think there's a lock to unlock.
Okay.
To be honest.
Yeah.
I just think that this is a team in slow decline.
So are they a playoff team?
Probably still a playoff team. I think LA will be there when it's all said and done. And assuming Jonathan Quick comes back.
We agree. If he is back and he's played for a month or two before the playoffs start.
Yeah, I still think this team in this division.
And they could take a team out in the playoffs.
But look at that team on paper. Like, pull them up right now. Pull up that team on paper, and you start to wonder, like, where – I think to Greg's point, what's there to unlock?
Look that up on the internet.
Sorry. I mean, Gabarek –
Blackhawks cap situation.
I mean, Gabarek's fallen off completely in the last about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Kopitar's not – I mean, I still think he's an elite player, but he's not playing like one right now. Trevor Lewis, Dwight King – you know, Carter's been good. Toffoli's been okay, not as good as he's been. Pearson, Dowd, Setoguchi.
Those were the guys like Toffoli and Pearson that had people excited about the future because they were pieces that fit into a cup contender. But when there's more emphasis on them now, more pressure on them.
Maybe that was their peak.
Good players, but they're not going to take that.
You can't be built entirely around vets and not have any young players that can step in and produce. And Toffoli's been okay, but he hasn't been great. Pearson's been extremely.
And their blue line's an issue. Outside of Doughty, the blue line's a problem. Their second pairing's fine, but they don't have anybody for Doughty to play with. I know that, and they don't have a decent third defense.
I like Alec Martinez. I think he's.
Yeah, I like the Muzzin Martinez combo there, but.
Yeah.
How about this?
Yeah, missing Slava Voynov.
Yeah. They've missed him. And again, he doesn't deserve to play for them ever again. But the on-ice aspect of it is they miss him.
They're going to have $26 million tied up in Kopitar, Jeff Carter, Marian Gabrick, and Dustin Brown in 2021. This is a team that's going to have problems.
Yeah, this is a team I worry about completely bottoming out at some point. Or, well, you know, no, there'll be a lockout and they'll get free buyouts. This is, you know how this is going to end. We do, but I say that jokingly, but I'm not really joking.
It didn't feel like a joke.
It's because this always works out in the end.
Players will smuggle Cubans.
Yeah, whose contract?
And they'll be able to buy him.
Whose contract can they void next?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Do we want to do the Lipinski list?
Do we?
I don't know.
I don't even know what it is.
Do we want to save it for New Year's, or do you want to do it today?
I got a couple. It's just the best moments of 2016, right?
Okay, go ahead.
Just throw them. Oh, it's just me.
I didn't even know what we were doing.
It's
this
your
one,
list.
So all you.
I feel like you should.
It's named after you. It's called
the
Lopinski's
list. Scam in internet history. Craig feeds me a topic for the list that he named after me.
Discuss.
And then half the time he changes the topic without telling one of us.
Well, I tell Jamie all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the one we don't tell.
Well, okay, then what's the topic, Jamie?
Best moments of 2016.
Whatever. It's only because I said that.
You don't know that now.
I do know that. How about P.K. Subban wearing a Jaromir Jagr mullet? That might be the top moment of 2016 for me.
It might have been Craig singing No Canada
that's
on the podcast.
Good,
oh, wow. We're going far afield here.
That was a good. That's a great
it really
moment.
It wasn't a good performance.
No, Craig wasn't happy
being
with
honest,
it.
Honest, I wasn't
Craig
happy
still
with it. And he went through it. Like, I could tell about halfway through he wasn't happy with
sounded
it, but he
better,
kept going.
Sounded
he
better
fight through
at
it.
Home.
No.
I really did.
No. Yeah.
My daughters were impressed.
Were they?
Sure.
Or were they just being nice because they're your
maybe.
Daughters?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What did they say when they heard the podcast version?
They actually said what I said.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
I got some criticism when I got home.
Oh.
A true journalist, teaching his daughters to be critical at a young age.
Yeah.
Phil Kessel winning a Stanley Cup. I won't say the Penguins winning
See,
the Cup.
See, that was going to be on my list. Phil Kessel winning a Cup.
So let's
that
just
was,
make a collective
that was a
list.
Cool moment.
It was a cool list.
That was a cool moment.
Absolutely. For a guy that gets a lot of criticism for no good reason.
Yeah, that yeah.
No good reason.
I feel like that story has gone away in my mind now, but that's true. It's still there. Earlier this season, he wasn't scoring. And I listened to a lot of Canadian hockey broadcasts, apparently, and they were still bashing Phil Kessel after
he still gets booed.
Could have won the Conn Smythe.
He was Toronto's best player for 3 years.
I've heard arguments this year that he was on the Penguins when they won the Cup. Basically, the Trent Dilfer was on the Ravens when they won the Super Bowl arguments. Like, no, that's not the case. Pittsburgh probably doesn't win that Cup without Phil Kessel.
Yeah, no, they don't. I don't understand.
Timely
goals too. How many times did we talk? Maybe he's the MVP. I mean, we
he
had
was
that conversation.
Right there.
Yeah, I mean,
right there.
There was a lot of conversation. I don't get it.
Can they be bad things?
Yeah.
Can they be bad things for your list?
Best moments. I mean, just memorable moments to me.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of bad things in 2016 to list off.
Let's fire away on those for a little
while. Well, I've got one more good one.
How'd you like to be Al Montoya?
Oh.
How do you think Al Montoya will remember 2016?
I never expect anybody to look directly at me and say, how'd you like to be Al Montoya? It's a loaded question. He will probably remember giving up 10 goals in one game.
I'm going to remember that moment from this year. This
yeah,
is crazy.
Yeah,
he actually believes their goalie to give up 10 goals.
He's been good this season other than that, though.
Yeah, it's tough to recover from.
He might win a cup. He's not going to win a cup.
I'll remember the Blackhawks penalty killing unit late 2016. That
it's gotten better.
That was interesting to watch.
Will you remember Brent Seabrook's two-post shot?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
This is kind of a fun game, actually, now. Las Vegas, this is back to good for me. Las Vegas getting a team. And I actually, Craig and I were in Vegas when this happened. I was in the awards show room.
We probably weren't in our room, right? Because we couldn't get in?
No, we were not in our room. Truth be told, I was eating a lot of food in the awards show room when the exact announcement was made. Craig was in the announcement room. So not only did Vegas get a team, Vegas got a team in front of a bunch of angry Quebec reporters. Which
those were the best questions.
Yeah.
Well, why weren't we good enough for you?
It had been laid out for them why they.
How delusional were they?
And Bill Daly had to get up at the podium after that and talk about we still like Quebec as a market. It had nothing to do with the corporate sponsorship prospects and basically Bill Daly just had to get up there and lie.
Yeah.
I just.
We still believe not. They're just not into you, Quebec.
It's baffling to me in the moment that they were there expecting there was going
to
be this announcement.
They went to Vegas to announce that Vegas will not be getting a team, but Quebec would.
That was the weirdest thing. And then also the thought that you're going to out argue Bill Daly or Gary Bettman, like you're going to put them on the spot and they're not going to know how to respond. This is what they do.
Fans in the arena. Yeah, that's the only thing that matters anymore. When
you're your 13,000 seat arena.
It's your fans. No. The picture has
even
changed.
Even if you thought you were going to – whatever. There was no way on that specific day anybody other than Las Vegas was getting a hockey team.
I don't think any – maybe there were a couple of really clueless people there from Quebec that actually thought there was still a chance that they could turn the tide here. But I think most of them that were there just to gripe.
Okay.
Yeah. Or gain a better understanding of why Quebec is not worthy of the NHL.
You could have gained that without driving or
you
flying
really
all the way to Vegas.
You had just done sound research into the market.
Yeah, just – or just ask them like any other time when they've explained numerous times what they're looking for.
Yeah, nobody listens when people talk anymore, though. It's 2016.
I know.
That's true.
That's pretty much
matter.
That's all
research
I got on my
matter.
List.
I wasn't there for it, but I've heard I think the most memorable one on the podcast was Luke losing his ID in Vegas, and then
recording
in the dark.
Yeah, that was. I do remember doing that podcast from the hotel room in Vegas with our splendid view of an empty lot. That's
probably where your ID was.
We were both too frightened to go
there. There were large rocks, sort of looked like headstones.
It wasn't the greatest view that anybody's ever
gently
had.
Used needles.
Gently used. Anything else?
No, not after gently used needles. That's a walk-off
that's
line.
That's kind of a showstopper. No other memories from 2016. We're all going to leave here.
Many
today.
More, but I think we should put more effort into this and come back with our best moments of 2016.
I put effort. Those are my best moments.
Oh. Yeah. I had some bad moments.
Yeah. Give us one more bad moment before we wrap up.
I'm out of bad moments right now. I can't get past gently used needles. All right, that's fair. That's all I'm thinking about.
Then we'll leave on this note. Jaromir Jagr won the NHL's first star of the week this past week. He's 58 years old, and he just won first star of the week. He's still producing.
I want him to play at 50. I really want to see it. I want him to stick to his word.
Yeah.
What he told his Colombian friend.
His Colombian
play
friend.
Play until you're 50.
If you ever write a book about your life in journalism,
What else would the book about his life be?
Well, I don't know. Maybe, yeah. Wow.
It's like, oh, my God.
Feels like a real slap in the face, Greg. Do you want to keep working with him?
Yeah. Okay. I want to know when. What comes after gently used, by the way?
Moderately used?
Aggressively?
Repurposed. I'm trying to think of like all the advertisements for like they won't say used car or used furniture. A new to you needle.
A new to you needle. Vintage.
I know. I need Frank Luntz in here to give me more ideas for how to make this work. But
like, collectible.
Yeah.
It's those gradations that I've always been confused by these things. Like, when does a pebble become a stone, become a rock? I don't know.
It always gets philosophical.
So gently used needle to
gently used
moderately
needles.
Used needle. How many usages define each of those
anything
categories?
Anything more than one.
Okay, so gently used is one.
Yeah, gently used is one. One used gently.
I tried to end this show, Let the Record Show, on a high note with Jaromir Jagr winning first star of the week.
Does it matter what was in the hypodermic?
I said you can really end on a high note if you use one of those gently used needles.
Oh, boy. All right. That'll do it for the Erik Karlsson episode of the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.
Again, we're not defending anything we just said.
Don't
do drugs, kids.
Where we're going to need to defend 80% of what we said on this show, and this is the one we're not going to play any defense. So, for Craig Morgan, for Jamie Eisner, I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to the Natural Hat Trick Podcast.